Okay, good evening. I'd like to call to order the April 21st, 2022 meeting of the Mountain Regional Administrative Control Board. We are meeting at the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District office. Do we have any public input?
No, they're not. They can speak if they want. They're on mute.
Okay. No public input in the room.
Okay, hearing none, we are going to skip over executive session and move that to the end of the agenda and move on to the consent agenda. So do we have any comments on the consent agenda? Does anyone have any questions on the check register?
I can start. I had one on the Bowman Collins fee. No concern about the fee or the charge. Mainly a question about the work. So are they on schedule, and is that approximately what we anticipated for their first billing?
Is Pine Meadows about $4,800?
Yeah, I would say they are doing a great job adhering to the schedule. And yeah, things are coming along nicely, and they're managing the project quite well, especially given all the stakeholders involved, I would say.
Awesome. That's good to hear. Thank you. That's it for me.
Anybody else have questions on the check register? I had a couple questions. One, we had a $70,000 wire, or just a WF transfer to Zion.
We're phasing out of Wells Fargo.
We have money
left there that we transferred over to our new Zion accounts.
Okay. Yeah. And then we had about $4,700 to Laughlin Water Associates. I just wondered which well we had assessed.
They're assessing all of our ground wells right now to help give us some advice on how to best manage those on production over the coming years.
Okay. That was just one billing on the work that they're doing on.
Yeah, we have a project that's going to continue over the calendar year. And I think the total scope is not to exceed $40,000, somewhere in that.
Okay, great. And then I believe we have one purchase order.
No purchase order.
Oh,
no purchase order.
Okay, great. Do we have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Motion to approve the consent agenda as discussed.
Okay. So that was Ian and Joel. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, aye, and any opposed? Okay, so that was unanimous. And then we are on to the consideration of approval of the district drought response level for 2022.
Okay. We just have a PowerPoint that Chris will bring up. Are you in Google Slides?
No.
Or are you in?
Where's the
top middle? I didn't just slideshow there.
Oh, there it is.
Oh, I think you're in. Oh, there we go. And I can just. Okay. So this is the time of the year when Weber Basin has come out with their drought response restrictions. It's been very public and in the news recently about the cuts that Weber Basin has been asking from their retail customers as well as their wholesale customers. So as part of our... Pardon me?
Are these restrictions or recommendations or... Can you clarify that?
Restrictions. I mean, we'll have targets that we're asking our customers to meet, but those targets, with certain metrics that are in the plan that we're proposing, there will be penalties if people are exceeding, say, number of days watering, and outside the times that we're recommending for watering. There's a fine outlined in what we're talking about today, but we'll get there in a little bit.
And Weber Basin is describing them as restrictions, not just recommendations like they did last year.
Yes, and there are penalties. So, for example, if we were to go over our allocation, we would be penalized 200% of our lease fee for every acre foot that we go over.
Okay, that's what I was interested in.
Yep. Okay, so I'll just, where do I put it?
Should just go.
That was the first time.
Oh, sorry. Okay, you might have to do it. The overview, just a quick overview of the presentation. We'll go over current conditions and why we're kind of in the situation that we're in. There's been a lot of talk about it. I'll just kind of cover those briefly. The intent and authority that our drought response plan provides to us and our governing bodies. The overview of the levels, the triggers, and the targets that create the drought response plan to be put in place. We'll talk about tactics and approaches for meeting those targets, and then the district's reductions in water use that we'll be asking for, what those financial impacts will be, and then enforcement, how we'll be monitoring those, and then kind of what our next steps are. Okay, quick current conditions. This is the U.S. Drought Monitor for Utah that comes out every Thursday. This is what Utah is looking like right now. From last week, we added that red circle in the middle of the state there, and those red shapes on either side are enlarging. Governor Cox did issue a drought emergency order today. It's a more broad order, just addressing and recognizing the situation the state is in again. A little bit different from what he did last year, where he imposed some restrictions. This time he's asking that those restrictions really be monitored by the individual water agencies. Historically, if we're looking at Western Summit County where we live, you can see it's that small little red shape to the right of the Great Salt Lake there. That's Western Summit County in the Weber Basin area where we're seeing that D3 level along with the southern and western parts of the state. A D3 extreme drought. Go ahead.
Excuse me. Are these the same levels that Weber Basin? The colors are kind of all the same.
No, this is a U.S. This is a federal monitor. It doesn't correlate to Weber Basin. A D3 extreme drought, which we are currently under, just what those impacts will be: increased fire danger. The native vegetation is generally stressed because the lower soil moistures and stream flows will generally be a little lower. Here is the current condition of our snow water equivalent in the state of Utah. You could, that little green X there at the kind of middle is usually when we peak with our snowpack. We are the flat line, the black line there that you can see. And that long flat line from January 1st, just after January 1st through the middle of February, was that long 7-week period that we had without any precipitation. So we are a little bit better than we were last year, but we definitely didn't have the snow pack we were hoping for this year. There have been some little bumps towards the end here. Those are those storms that have been coming in recently. But you can see the peak of our black line was, you know, about a week before we normally see the high peak on the snow point of the snowpack. Sorry.
Can I ask a question? So sure. What's the difference between the top graph and the bottom one that's much shorter?
I actually couldn't tell you from this one. I think it may be a longer time period. Where I'm just looking at this one is basically just this water year.
Yeah. Okay.
But I'm not referencing. I'm just referencing that top graph, not the bottom. But
yeah.
That is basically our water year starting October 1st. Here's our soil moisture for the Weber-Ogden area. This is actually one of the one of the better points that we're looking at, and we're lucky to have the soil moisture that we do. Last year, our soil moisture level was far below that, and I want to say it was even record low, trending more towards that red line. But you could see we were well above the beginning of the year. We had some early snow. We kind of flatlined a little bit with no precipitation. Obviously, it's soil moisture locked in during the winter. And then we started to peak as the snow started to melt off. So this slide is basically just saying that our soil moistures are in a good spot. This one might be a little bit harder to see, but this is the state of Utah's general outlook. These are the snowpack or snow water equivalents in the different basins. You can see where the Weber-Ogden, we ended up at 63% average snowpack, which is kind of that whole general orange area there. Some of the basins were a little worse off in the red, and some were a little better off on the eastern side of the state. So that's kind of a quick rundown on our conditions. Now when we talk about our drought response plan that we put into place last year, these are kind of what the intent was when we established it last year and what the authorities are for these as outlined in the plan. So the intent is to provide a response framework for Mountain Regional when we enter into a qualifying drought condition. Qualifying drought condition can be a trigger from Weber Basin. It can be a significant loss of source, and it can also be due to an emergency declaration. So in this situation, we've been triggered because we've had a Weber Basin reduction. These are kind of authority who the approval levels go through. The district general manager will provide the drought level recommendation to the ACB, Administrative Control Board, and then the general manager and the district will carry out enforcement activities. The Administrative Control Board approves the drought level, enacts any drought surcharges that may go along with that level, and then approves the use of the drought reserve if we were to need those. Last year we funded $800,000 into a drought reserve. So in order to help offset some of the reduction in the use that we'll see from customers, we have $800,000 available to us for a revenue shortfall. We weren't hoping to have to use that this year, but it's available, and I'm glad that we put it in place last year in light of the situation that we're in now. County Council then would, Summit County Council would come involved if there were any budget amendments that needed to happen due to any revenue shortfalls that couldn't be covered by our reserve funds or expenses that maybe were unforeseen due to enforcement efforts, public service efforts, additional repairs and maintenance that we didn't foresee in light of the situation that we're in with the drought. So Weber Basin demand reduction that they asked for. This is their current level response level. It has six levels, and their board of trustees on March 31st enacted the level 5, which is the extreme level. So they are currently asking for a 60% reduction in secondary water, 40% in ag water, 60% in M&I culinary outdoor water and 10% indoor water. With the total demand reduction they're forecasting for or projected of 123,000 acre feet. So for what that means for Mountain Regional, Mountain Regional is a wholesale culinary, has culinary contracts, will be reduced by 10%, with additional reduction proportional to the volume of culinary water used for outdoor irrigation. So basically what that means is all of our contracts take a 10% haircut for indoor usage, and then additional reductions are based on what your indoor versus outdoor use is for irrigation. So looking at this chart, we have total acre feet of contracts with Weber Basin of 6786. We need to back out from there the promontory raw water that is used for their golf course, which is 1,400, because that's treated differently as just secondary water, so there would be a 60% reduction to those contracts. Summit Water Deliveries, we have a wholesale agreement with Weber Basin to deliver water to Summit Water. This is treated slightly differently because we have a wholesale agreement and some settlement water that we have to account for. So if we back that off, the total that we're looking at available for our customers is 4686 as far as what will be reduced. If we split that, those contracts into what we use indoor versus outdoor, our customers generally use about 45% of their water indoor and 55% of their water outdoor. So if we get a 10% reduction on the 2109, that's 211 acre feet, an outdoor reduction of 60% on that 2577 is just over 1,500 acre feet. So the remaining contracts available for use would be 2,929 to Mountain Regional Water. If we exceed those volumes, that will come at a cost to us of 200% of the current lease fee cost that I mentioned a little bit earlier. So it is a penalty, and Weber Basin is enforcing that. So we will be in contact. We will be reporting to Weber Basin on our volumes of water that are being used to make sure that we're hitting our targets and that we're not in a situation where we could potentially end up in an overage. Just for reference, last year our customers used 1,100 acre feet outdoor, and we used 900 acre feet indoor. Any questions on that?
So we should be, if we were at 2021 levels, we would be okay.
We should be okay.
Okay.
Yep.
Have we put a number to that 200%, the dollar amount?
All of our contracts are slightly different. So
their ballpark.
Average is
300.
Yeah, 300 something per acre foot, I say. But yeah, we shouldn't get near it.
So, I think we'll be okay.
So we haven't spent a lot of time looking at that yet, Sandy.
So we looked briefly at Weber Basin's drought response levels. Maybe I'll just go back to that really quick. So when we originally adopted our plan in 2021, Weber Basin only had 5 drought response levels. They did not have the 40% reduction they now call the severe category. They went from level number 3, a 20% reduction, to the extreme, a 60% reduction. So in talking with Weber Basin, it was, they noted, and we had been noticing too, per our drought response plan, that a jump from a 20 to a 60 is pretty large, and that there needed to be a step in between. So they added this step over this past winter to get them what they're now showing is the 6th level of drought response. And because we were basing our original drought plan on Weber Basin, we used their 2018 plan, which only had the 5. So that's where currently our response levels are off slightly, and we'll talk about how we may be able to address that and respond to updating our response levels to match theirs.
And is this now for the end of the year, or just
10% is on total contract, so it's for the whole year, and the outdoor is just the irrigation season.
Yeah.
So here are our district demand targets. These are, we list them as targets on our response plan, but, you know, this is where what we need people to meet, and we'll talk about some of the restrictions, how we're going to be noticing people if they're not following the restrictions. We currently have the 5. We'd like to move to the proposed, which is adding that severe level. I'm calling it a 3.5 just for discussion purposes so that we don't get confused about what was the old level 4 and the new level 4. But I would like Mountain Regional, or staff is recommending that we move to the same response levels that Weber Basin is showing and add that severe category, which they're showing as a 40%. I have a 30 to 40% there. But I think it makes sense to mirror what response levels they have in place, because the jump from a 20 to 60 is pretty extreme, and we're finding that based on the situation we're currently in, a level 3.5 will likely work the best for us right now.
But in the update to the drought response plan, you would exactly mirror their 1 through 6?
Yes. That's what I'd like to do. Okay.
And we can, the 40% for the severe?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
But we don't really get to pick which level when you say it would work better for us.
No, we can pick which level.
Well, Weber Basin has given us a level of the 60% and 10%, but when we review our leases and our usage to achieve their goal, because our customers already use less than our leases would allow, we do not have to have a severe cut. That's why we can institute just a 30 to 40% decrease in outdoor watering and a 10% indoor and still meet the restriction by Weber Basin. Does that make sense, Mike?
We have enough leases for about 2,900 acre feet available.
Yeah.
Correct.
And I will.
We only use about.
Yeah, and I'll also, just to clarify a little bit, and I apologize I didn't earlier, Weber Basin does have a distinction between their metered customers and their unmetered customers. They have quite a population, I don't know the number off the top of my head, but of secondary water customers that are unmetered. So for their retail customers that are unmetered, they are getting a 60% reduction and can only water one time a week. And that is going to be based on their address. For their metered customers, similar to Mountain Regional, although their metered customers are using secondary water and not culinary water like we are, they are allowing their customers to water not as many times, but they're allowing to water them during the week as many times as they would want, but they are only being allocated an amount of water to use during that week. So for example, they're using, they have a GIS system where they map all of their lots, and so they know how much irrigated space is in each one of their retail customers' lots. And so they'll allocate them a certain portion of water on a weekly basis. Per discussions with Weber Basin, that's about 4,500 gallons, acre feet and gallons, 4,500 gallons a week. So for outdoor water. So if we kind of apply those same metrics to our customers, we're looking at a $20,000 to $30,000 gallon, limit that we're going to be really asking our customers to target, similar to what Weber Basin is asking their metered customers to do. So this brings me to the target. Getting into that 20 to 30,000 gallon range would really require 2 times a week watering. What we're asking for right now, and we're going to recommend, is 2 times a week now, because as you go into the summer months, you really don't want to be overwatering your turf. That just creates a shallow root. So if you're able to really limit it to two times for the recommended times that we've listed up here, 20 minutes for pop-up sprayers, 40 minutes for rotors, and 60 minutes for drip, that will allow your root system to really go a little bit deeper, and it makes it, it trains them to be a little more hardy when it gets into those warmer summer months like a July or an August. So we would recommend no more than two times a week right now. When we move into those hotter seasons, we would recommend not to exceed three. And if you're exceeding three in that time period, that would be subject to a warning just saying, hey, you're watering more than three times a week. We're limiting it to no more than this, and this is the target for this time of the year. We currently, on the second bullet point there, we talk about our current hours. We ask customers to water are from 6 p.m. to 10 a.m. District staff feels like that, you know, you can be hitting some pretty warm times of the day if you're talking about 6 p.m. So we feel like to get the most efficient absorption of that water into your soil, you really need to be irrigating between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m., which I would say the majority of our customers are already doing. But just enforcing those, that if you're watering at 10 a.m. in the morning, you know, that could be another where you would get a warning that we're really trying to stick between those hours of 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. for watering. And a lot, you know, additional hand watering of established trees may need to be done, you know, if it's needed. We would ask no hosing down of sidewalks or driveways. We would also ask, and Weber Basin's asking the same thing, limited installation of any new landscapes that can adhere to the water restrictions that we've laid out. And we would recommend if you had any significant landscape projects that those be delayed until you're able to water that frequently enough to establish the landscaping, because it likely won't be able to get the water that it needs when it goes in. So those are kind of the targets that we're looking at for this level 3.5 questions.
So on the new installation, is there discussions happening when someone comes in for plan review or something saying, okay, yes, you're going to come in, you're going to pay your fee, but just understand we prefer that you not landscape until...
Yeah, those are questions that are conversations we're going to start to have with those people.
Lisa,
yes.
Have Weber Basin confirmed the 2,900 acre fee that's kind of our limit, or is that our calculation?
Yeah, no, I talked about it with Weber Basin and Scott Paxman last week. I guess, you know, a lot of these targets and are very similar to Weber Basin. Weber Basin was asking for no installation of new landscapes at the March 31st meeting. They indicated, their board said to move to go with a limited installation instead of a full restriction of landscape installation. We went with the same recommendation.
If we exceed the 2,900 acre fee and the 200% that's just a few times penalty, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What will happen?
What could the dollar amount of that be?
It's roughly $400 per acre foot.
So you pay the penalty just based on the acre feet you went over?
Mm-hmm.
And then is it 200% on top of the 100%
that we've already paid? We've already paid it, yeah. So it would be a 200% on top of what we've already paid.
Yeah.
I don't think, based on our contract, we're going to get, with these restrictions and putting these, you know, guidelines in for our customers, based on what we messaged last year and the reduction that we saw from, you know, simply an education standpoint, I think we're going to be closer to the 2021 numbers.
Yeah, we should not. We should be 2021 numbers, I would think, would be our top, because that was about a 15% reduction last year when we ended up with 2,100 acre feet, 2,100. So we should, with the required restrictions and what we're putting in place this year, I would think be really close to only 2,000 acre feet. So I think we've got some wiggle room, let's say, before that would potentially kick in.
Is that what we did? What did you use for your model? How much water to see the financial impact?
Oh, we'll get to that, I think, in the next slide or two. Why does it look so page for me? Okay, so just a quick overview of the tactics and approaches for meeting the demand target or the reduction target. Communication obviously is going to be a priority, and it's going to start as soon as we get the level, as we get the approval. The district also has water audits that are available to customers, so customers are able to call up and schedule that with our operators. It's a free, no charge, but this helps customers kind of understand where their systems may be inefficient, if they have broken zones that aren't working. It really helps try to educate them on the most efficient use of the system that they currently have. If they wanted to go one step further, Weber Basin offers kind of an efficiency testing, and jump in here if you have anything to add, Anna. But they can get down to, once you have your system in a really, you know, you've done everything to get your system to a good working order, then you can do an efficiency test where they start looking at soil moisture levels and really trying to capture what the right amount is for the landscaping that you have in place. But we're also, you know, expense reductions. If we need to look for, you know, ways to potentially delay some repair and maintenance that we had going on, if there are some projects that we could maybe push a year, that's what we would do. We also, and Steve will go through these, that we have some surcharges in that level 3.5 on the higher use tiers to try to recapture some of the revenue loss that we'll have from that reduction. We'll be doing enforcement, like we talked about. We'll be doing a weekly monitoring of all customers, because we're all meters, and so we have access to our Ion Water software, which we can easily download and take a look at where people are on a weekly basis, and either notify people that they're watering every day and it needs to, it's a warning. Or if they're you know, using a lot of water in those 2 days a week, and that would need to be a reduction. So we're going to use that and monitor that on a weekly basis for our customers and reach out to them during the month. Stakeholder coordination. We're working with Weber Basin. We've been in meetings with them to go over these reductions. We're holding a water summit, or symposium, I think we're calling it, with Park City, Summit Water, Mountain Regional, Weber Basin, the sewer, Snidewell Basin, Water Reclamation. We'll all be having a presentation on Monday, May 2nd at 5:30, and we'll be giving an overview of, you know, the water picture, how, you know, kind of long term, where we came from, the regionalization agreement that all the parties have entered into with Weber Basin, how we forecast our supply, how we look to the future, and kind of what we're all doing for conservation efforts. Customer actions, we're going to ask for, you know, reducing what you can do, I guess, this is kind of things you can do, customers can do to help reduce your irrigated area, really look at, if now is the time to start thinking about drought-tolerant landscapes. You know, this isn't a one and done as we saw last year. This wasn't a message of, you know, we're going to be better next year. We're in an even more difficult situation than we were last year. So this drought is persisting, and we need to be prepared for that. So we need to monitor our usage, which we do. All of our users are metered. We need to continue, and we will continue to promote our Eye on Water feature, which allows customers to look at their usage down to 15-minute increments, and it's updated every 24 hours. So it's really, really helpful for finding leaks if something were to happen, or just to look at when you are irrigating, adjusting those sprinklers if you're not hitting the reductions that we're asking for. Installing efficient fixtures in your home to help with that 10% indoor reduction, following water restrictions, and again, just indoor reduction strategies, shorter showers, fixing any leaky toilets, installing water efficient fixtures, things of that nature. And we have a complete list provided in that section 7 of our drought report. I'll turn it over to Steve.
So we knew that.
What was the date and time for that water summit?
It's Monday, May 2nd at 5:30.
So we knew there would be some financial impacts to us as we asked customers to use less water, because about half of our revenue comes from usage charges. So when we originally put the plan together following River Basin, we kind of broke it into how we would cover that. We look at three expense reductions, drought surcharges, and then application of our drought reserve. So with the new 3.5 level in place, our target is to cover about 15% of the financial impact through expense reductions, 50% through drought surcharges, and about 35% through accessing the reserve that we set up last year to make up for the loss we're going to see in revenue from lower usage levels. Okay. So based on 2021 water year, these are how the dollars that tie to those percentages. We're going to see about a $1.2 million financial impact. We're going to cut expenses by $184,000, have drought surcharges of about $600,000, and then dip into our $800,000 drought reserve to the amount of about $442,000. Again, we haven't been through this before, so we're doing our best estimates on exactly what behaviors will be, but this is a pretty good estimate of what we will see from the usage tiers and what we've seen usage-wise previously.
Hey, Steve?
Yeah.
So, how come the wheels didn't fall off in 2021 when they only used 2,000 acres? I don't know what we're targeting now, but we didn't have any of these in place.
Usage was, usage was lower, but we had other revenues. Like, as you may recall, impact fees were really high last year, so that helped us with our debt cover, our debt ratio requirements, and our meter fee connections were high because of growth. So even though our usage revenue in 2021 actually dropped almost $800,000 from 2020. So we had a pretty significant drop in revenue from usage, but it didn't become glaring in the financials because of the other revenues that we did have in 2021. Does that make sense, Mike?
Okay. Yeah, there was $800,000 last year that we lost in revenue on sales.
Yeah, compared to the previous year, which was a higher usage year. So our usage can swing quite a bit, or our revenue can swing quite a bit with weather patterns. So this year, we're not only negotiating weather patterns, we're drought charges and people's behavior. So it's a new landscape we're trying to navigate.
We also
are not giving the impact fees.
We won't get what we did last year. We're more on budget to where, as you recall, last year we were very over budget. This year we're tracking right on budget so far through the first quarter.
Okay, thanks.
You bet. So as we looked at where to start to implement these drought surcharges, we looked at our customer usage from last July, which was our highest usage month last year. And over 80% of our residential customers use 30,000 gallons or less. So only 20% of our customers actually used over 30,000 gallons in the highest month last year. We also looked at kind of the data from Weber Basin and our own, what we were told, and 30,000 basically allows you 10,000 gallons indoor and 20,000 gallons outdoor, which equates really closely to that 2 times per week at about 3,000 gallons per run. So that's where most of our customers should be able to stay under that 30,000 gallon mark. And so we didn't want to pass on a rate increase to them because they're already acting responsibly. We saw the need to start to make up some of the lost revenue a little bit in that $30,000 to $40,000 gallon tier. And then as you can see, it incrementally grows up from there. So we originally had an option A in our first drought plan. As we reevaluated that, we wanted to move a little bit of the drought surcharge into that tier four, that 10,000 gallons between 30 to 40,000 gallons to 15, and we could bring down the tier five so it wasn't just such a cliff or such a dramatic jump at one point. Those charges, there's no surcharge on every account. That only kicks in at the 60%. So basically, anybody who uses less than 30,000 gallons in a month will not see a change to their bill. As they move up through those tiers, the percentage increase on their bill does increase significantly. That person
out 60 out home.
I'm sorry,
that was really hard to hear.
I'm sorry. What is the drought 60% out?
That means 60% outdoor watering and 10% indoor watering.
That's our current level four.
And right now we're asking for drought 40% outdoor and 10% indoor.
So yeah. Which option?
And option B is what we would recommend.
When Steve and I were putting this together last year after we met with Weber Basin on Friday afternoon and looked at, they had a financial person there and we were looking at different, usage patterns and where we thought we really needed to be. And, you know, and once we heard what Weber Basin was kind of allowing per lot size for those metered customers, we felt like, 40,000 gallons was quite a bit, and that once we also noted that most of our customers are using less than that we thought we needed to bring that tier, the 40,000 gallons, up a little bit and start the surcharge a little bit sooner, just so that we're really trying to avoid usage getting into those really high tiers. And if it does happen, it has a financial trigger to it.
So the messaging and the financial triggers should kind of go hand in hand. What we message them to do should keep them, for the most part, in normal usage tiers. It's just the ones who historically have used more or who don't drop to watering 2 times a week will be paying more. But that 20% of the customers will generate, most likely, the revenue, again, that we're shortfall, that we're making up through surcharges.
And just for the record, in the usage column, there's no units listed, but those are gallons, right, Steve?
Those are gallons, correct.
Okay.
And the commercial starts at a higher, like the commercial gets more?
Yeah, commercial is a little bit different. As you notice, their first tier, they only have 7 tiers. Their first tier starts a little higher. They kind of skip a tier 3 charge, more or less, but we're making their first step up also come at that 40,000 gallon mark.
And this is only for outdoor commercial?
Well, this is all commercial.
This is all commercial.
All commercial. So yeah, their rate structure has never been quite the same as residential. Some of their demands they can't control as much running a business if they require water for it. So, and a lot of them have, not to get too complicated, but multiple ERCs. So so those tiers allow more water at those lower rates. No ERCs do. Any other? Sorry, this is the something good to absorb. And if you have any questions, please feel free to ask.
Okay. Just to be pedantic, I think having units on all your figures would be really helpful. So yeah, that's gallons per month.
Okay.
Just get updated into this as well as all our other figures. It seems like I think our staff know what the units are, and so we just present things and everybody's on the same page. But, you know, for the public and all of our outside users, it would be good if you just show your units and anything you're presenting.
All right. Thank you, Ian.
Yep.
So, Steve, I have one last question on that column of 40% outdoor and 10% indoor. Is that this level 3.5?
That is the 3.5 level, Mike.
That's our model right there is what we're... And we had it at option A, but B is just kind of a second look at it.
Yeah. Like Lisa said, after we went with Weber Basin a couple of weeks ago and then went back last week, it seemed the right move to spread that, to bring the rate increase to that tier just above 30,000 and kind of phase it in a little more gradually right there.
What was the decision to drop the tier 7 so low?
The $60?
Oh no, sorry, never mind.
Okay.
Yeah, just to reiterate that 80% of the customers will basically not be impacted by this, right? The 80% of our customers use 30,000 gallons or less during those peak months. So this is only going to realistically impact 20%.
Are you able to characterize who the other 20% are?
Yes, Steve, you were talking earlier about the usage.
They're more typical large residential homes. Is that what you're looking for,
yeah.
Ian? That have...
Yeah, so 80% won't be affected by this. Who are the 20% that we will be affecting with this rate?
Large residential homes that use more than 30,000, which is large landscaping or excessive watering where they maybe water every day, large swaths of irrigated grass and trees and shrubs and things like that.
Water features, you know, we'd ask that, you know, this would probably be a time to turn off the water feature for the summer.
And is that percentage just for residential, or is it for commercial as well?
We're just talking kind of residential right now, Ian, on the 80-20.
Yeah, that's just residential.
Okay.
We have a small, our commercial population isn't, what do we have, 200?
There's just slightly over 200 commercial customers. We're very heavily skewed towards residential customers with, you know, 42 to 4,300 residential customers.
Chris, I don't understand your comment, but why is it important to note that this only applies to 20%?
Well, just so that I think Chris, I'm sorry, you can answer this.
Yeah, it's just that we're not being punitive to the normal consumer, right? It's not the everyday non-regional customer, the 20% that's sort of exceptional use, those are the ones that it's going to be more punitive towards. That's kind of what I was getting at. It's not the normal, for lack of a better term, the worker population is not going to be carrying the brunt of this.
Yeah, and from discussions with Weber Basin, you know, they recognize that all of our customers are metered. And it's not meant to penalize those that are already only using 20,000 gallons. They're already low water users. They can't reduce another 60%. They're already at a low point. So it's not meant to be punitive to people who have already you know, put in drought tolerant landscapes and reduce their turf areas. It's really for those larger users that are excessively watering, you know, every single day.
Yeah, and everybody should be able to, you know, at that 30,000 gallon level per month, maintain, at least let their landscape survive. It may not be as green as they've always wanted it to be, but maybe we shouldn't have a lot of, let's say, dying off of landscapes, as long as they use that efficiently.
And this is Joel. I've got some questions on the previous slide. Can you go back to that?
Yeah.
The one before that, I'm sorry. The one before that.
Where did we go forward
on? That's water audits and education. Do we have the staff to do that?
Well, we're in the process of trying to hire another customer service specialist for Anna's team. Not unlike any other employer in Utah or Summit County, it's difficult to find people. We've been recruiting and interviewing the last 2 weeks, and we had a person we thought was going to be great, and she had already took another job offer. So we're continuing, but we're trying to add another person to Anna's team to help. It will be a full-time communications, messaging, interface with our customers, and to help. We added another operator to our field team, so we have two water operators now on our customer service side that just handle work orders and service orders with customers. So we added one person there at the beginning of this year. So if we can get one more for the customer service, which we had in the budget, we anticipated hiring another person this year, I think that would be a huge benefit to Anna, and I think we would be able to handle the workload.
Do we anticipate being able to tell people what will be the next Wednesday or next Friday or next Tuesday or whatever? I mean, do we have enough staff so these people don't get apoplectic and get pissed off, pardon my language?
I think we have, well, we're going to use messaging through Everbridge and our electronic tools more than having to, or are you talking about people actually calling in and asking questions? So message, we have a...
Oh, yeah, I guess both. I mean, you answered from my first question, but I mean, I'm really concerned that we don't over-promise and under-deliver.
How many water auditors did you get my drift?
Well, last year we set aside...
It can be time-consuming.
We set aside one day last year for just water audits.
One day per week,
yeah. And we made exactly
the same. All right.
I was going to say we just tried to make sure that we made appointment times and we had the customer had to be there so that we weren't wasting operator time. But I completely understand your concern. Yeah. You know, this is like, we've said, it's a little bit of uncharted territory. You know, we're going to have to be a little bit, we're going to learn some things from this. We're not going to do everything right the first time. And this is going to be a learning experience, and we're going to have to adjust. We're going to have to find out what's working and what's not working. And I wish I could say I knew 100% this was going to work, but I know there are going to be shortcomings, and we're going to have to deal with them as they arise.
Okay.
Ian, back to
one of my pet peeves is it takes so gosh-darn long for the water to heat up from close to the water heater to the back to one of our bathrooms, so to speak. Is there anything we can do to speed up the heating process and be more efficient in that regard? I know you say install a fish and picture, but gosh darn.
A tank brick water heater, Joel would kind of do that, but they're pretty expensive usually to install. But a tank brick water heater is pretty much the instantaneous hot.
I just want people to know that we're working on solutions as well. Not just our language again, parking orders and not doing our part. It's people are very, very quick to criticize and they say, oh gosh, you know, they're not really listening to me. They're just barking orders left and right. And I mean, anything that we can do to communicate, be more efficient, whether it be water heaters or whether it be taps inside or outside, I think you get my drift.
Yeah, and I think, Joel, one of our biggest education pieces, in my opinion, is to let people understand how much of the water they use is actually outside. That it is a massive amount.
Oh, absolutely.
Because once they start to realize that, then you can cut your water usage so much more by turning off your sprinklers one more day a week than anything you could ever do inside, kind of thing. So.
Yeah, I mean, the more we communicate, I know I appreciate the choir, but the more we can do the communicate efficiency, I think the better off we'll be. I mean, my colleagues may disagree, but I want to voice my opinion.
Is Weaver still doing the rebates on the smart irrigation and that they did toilets a couple years ago?
Yeah, and I was just going to mention that we have a conservation page on our website that has all of those. It's called UtahWaterSavers.org, I think, is where you can go and see all the current rebates listed. And that's a great resource. And they are doing the toilets, the smart irrigation controllers. There's a turf buyback program, I believe Weaver Basin is. I think Summit County residents can participate if you qualify. Weaver Basin is running that right now.
Is that one just and maybe the water.
It's strips.
It's just strips right now. Strip. It's not lawns.
Yeah.
Ian, I wanted to go back to one of your questions about who. So we talked about that the rate increase of the drought surcharges would only impact 20% of our customers. Just as a gauge, about 30% of our residential customers we classify as large residential, or over 3,000 square feet. So just because you're a large residential customer doesn't mean you have to use more than 30,000 gallons a month. We have a large swath of them that don't. So they will probably feel it more than others, but just so you know, it's not like they can't avoid it. Some of them, a good percentage of them already don't use more than 30,000 gallons a month.
That's good insight.
I mean, the only thing I would add is that'll shut up. And I don't think we over-communicate the severity of this whole issue, whether we're at this level of drought or that level of drought or this level of drought. I mean, obviously, I don't want to be in the wrong situation. I don't think any of us want that. But by the same token, if we don't over-communicate, I mean, people will gripe and bitch and moan and piss and get all bent out of shape. And I want to kind of avoid that.
Well, and I think that's the expectations, Lisa. And I don't have any expectations of perfection. And I know we're going to learn. And what Joel's saying, you know, have some of these things that they can do to help solve the problem. And what we want, the expectation is we get prepared the best we can.
Yeah.
And communicate.
Good, thank you, Mike. Thank you. Very well said. Very well said.
It's thought of from you. I like it.
Okay. Did you want to start talking about this?
Yeah, we've already, I think, covered most of these things. This is just the enforcement side. the drought level three, we asked for the 20% reduction. We did that last year, and that was irrigating every other day from 6 p.m. to 10 a.m. This drought level 3.5 that we're recommending would be the 30 to 40% reduction in outdoor, irrigating two times a week, no more than three, and from that 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. window. A lot of times customers, we talked about 20-minute pop-ups, 40-minute rotor, 60-minute drip. A lot of times customers say, well, how long do I water in between, you know, on each day? And that's a guideline. And then we would ask for that 10% reduction on the indoor. And that's for comparative purposes. Drought level 4 would be at the 60% reduction, and that's where we ask for only one time a week based on your address. These are the fines and penalties that we're recommending. The first offense would be a warning. Just that would just be delivered through our Everbridge system. It would be delivered to the customer in a letter, letting them know that, you know, they were watering more than three times a week. They were watering during the off time. We would follow that up with a second, third, fourth, if it continues, with a fifth option of suspension of service.
So is this, if you use more than 30,000 gallons, are you going to get the, what's the trigger point for those?
That's the two to three times a week.
Okay, so it's just usage, the amount of times as opposed to the number of gallons.
Yep.
And I'm probably going to get shot for saying this out loud, but if the list on the first offenses isn't long, I think we should call people and begin the education process.
Well, and that's kind of what we wanted to do with the weekly basis, is look and see where people are, you know, and then start direct calling those people that are hitting, or, you know, huge amounts of water in one day, and start just saying, like, hey, this is what your bill could look like.
Yeah.
What other things? Do you have a leak? Like, really try to engage. And again, that's just going to be another, you know, it's resource intensive, right? We've got 5,000 customers.
And I'll help call.
Yeah. How good! It went through, and we sent out letters like, you have this leak for X amount of days, you have this leak for X amount of days, you have this leak for X amount of days. And we just had to find, like, the comfort zone of, like, what leaks were we going to call on and what was one. I think we started at above 10 gallons an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were lower than that, people would have a hard time.
We'll start with the biggest ones. But, yeah, the you use 20,000 gallons this first week of the month. You know, if you keep up at this rate, you're going to have a really expensive water bill.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. And last year we did reach out to our top 20 customers. So our top 20 customers, we sent direct emails or direct letters to them, and we had a call back from almost every single one saying, what can I do to help? So I think, I mean, I'm going to be, you know, half glass full, and that I think a lot of the community understands the situation that we're in. I think they want to do the right thing. I just we haven't been in the situation before, and people haven't really had to make these hard decisions with landscaping choices. That now, you know, we're in a multi-year drought that's going to require that kind of attention. And it's a growing, it's understandable. I completely understand. But from the experience, what we had last year, people were receptive and wanted to try to understand how to fix it. So, we will do those top 20 customers. I'm going to meet with Promontory, is having an HOA meeting next week. I'm going to attend that. They've already adopted some ordinances they want to put in place for their...
Yeah, they've already reduced. No more water features. You can only have up to, like, 2,000 square feet of turf instead of 4,000.
Yeah.
So, and they're allowing you to plant smaller trees, because obviously the bigger the tree, the more water they'll need to get established. So
yeah,
they've really jumped in, and you've got to think that they're probably in that 20%.
Yeah.
So,
and they've been great to work with. So
yeah,
we're going to go to the HOA. It sounds like they're really receptive. Anna and I are going to talk to them next week. We're going to send out letters to all the HOAs, the large water users, just to get the information out there and try to come meet with them and let them help walk them through these restrictions.
And people really respond well, for example, and so maybe we don't make back the full $600,000 from the usage charges. We'll just
lean on the drought reserve fund more if we need to.
Yes.
And the expense and other mechanisms. Because, yeah, it's right now we don't know. Exactly how people are going to respond. And they may respond after getting a first water bill that's higher than they want to pay.
Yeah.
So.
And then we talked about the weekly monitoring of meter data.
I've got a couple questions, Lisa.
Okay.
Can you remind me, what was the justification for the 30 to 40% range for reduction outdoors?
Because if customers were watering every other day under our guidelines, our irrigation guidelines last year, if you reduce that by one, that gets you to 33%. So, and that's kind of the target of what we're saying, two times a week. It's going to get you a 33% reduction. And if you do some of those other things, reducing a little bit of your pop-up sprinkler time, making sure you're watering during the coolest parts of the day, you're going to get to that 40% that we're recommending in that new level 3.5. Sorry.
And that gets us where we need to be with Weber Basin.
Yeah.
So why we don't have to go to 60% because of our additional lease fees we have.
Okay.
Water.
And second question, so this drought level 3.5, that's solely getting us to the Weber Basin reductions that have been requested. Correct.
I mean, it's keeping us under our limit of the total reductions that we need to not hit those penalties. Yes.
Okay. But we're not proposing any reductions to our other sources. So this is just dealing with the Weber Basin leases.
Well, I guess this whole effort, because the majority of our contracts are with Weber Basin, you know, we don't want to, you know, we're doing this as a conservation effort so that we don't say, oh, well, Weber Basin's getting reduced, but we're going to stress all of our other sources that we own. We need to manage that whole system collectively, and we don't want to put too much pressure on our aquifers right now to get them in a situation where we could, you know, if we lose one, you know. So we're trying to manage this as a collection of our sources so that we're able to provide the level of, you know, a reasonable amount of water, but without stressing all of our sources to do that. Does that make sense, Ian?
Okay. Yeah, you saw exactly where I was going. So,
okay.
Yeah, great
yeah,
job.
No, I don't know. We're mindful of all of our sources, obviously, with the drought monitor indicating that of Western Summit County. I mean, we need to be mindful of the situation and our location.
Okay, and this will account for it. It'll not only deal with those Weber, right,
yes,
but also all our groundwater and surface water sources that are inside the district.
Correct.
Yeah, we won't be ramping up production on wells to offset anything.
Okay, so we're at the next step. The Administrative Control Board approved the drought response level and the potential update to the 2021 drought response plan that we talked about with that level 3.5 and mirroring what Weber Basin is showing of that new sixth level response plan. Drought surcharges that Steve went over, we could be approved at the May 19th Administrative Control Board meeting. That would need to be done with a rate hearing, so that has to happen after 6 p.m., and we need to notice customers prior to that. So if we make a decision on, you know, that 3.5 level that's being recommended, we would send out a letter to all of our customers with the information on the reductions and the drought surcharges that would be going into place. Those rates would become effective with the June 1st use, which would be the bill dated the end of June 30th.
So we're not going to have a rate hearing next Thursday?
No.
Okay.
Watering restrictions and surcharges would remain in effect until Weber Basin modifies or discontinues
those drought restrictions that they put in place. And, you know, Weber Basin has said, you know, has said the similar thing that I've mentioned. You know, this is a little bit of a fluid situation. You know, we're going to keep in constant contact with Weber Basin and see what they're experiencing as their customers begin to water outdoors. And I guess June 1st, we are asking all customers to also delay the startup on their irrigation until June 1st. Normally, we'll see some customers start up in May, and Weber Basin has delayed by 1 month from April 15th to May 15th. We're a little bit higher, you know, in elevation when we're in a mountain area, so we're targeting June 1st before anybody really starts watering outside.
How are we getting that request out to the customers?
Well, we're talking about it tonight so we can decide on what we want to do, and then we're going to start sending out letters to our customers, providing Everbridge communications, and then, like I talked about, meeting with HOAs, and I did an interview with KPC or the Park Record yesterday about the meeting tonight. We're having the water symposium on May 2nd, where we will disseminate the information again, and then I'd imagine we will be on with KPCW and our new general manager next week. Do you have any other recommendations?
So it was kind of a different question, like, because I thought we had asked them to do this already, to delay their irrigation, so that's...
Well, in the bill message that we sent out in April, we mentioned the Weber Basin restrictions that were then not 100% approved. It was still in the works. We asked for the 10% reduction because Weber Basin knew they were going to ask for that. What we didn't have clarity on yet was the amount of the outdoor reduction that we were going to need to do. So we did message 10% indoor and a, you know, to delay your irrigation. We didn't give a specific date. Now I'm saying June. Now that I know it's May 15th, we're saying 2 weeks later, June 1st.
And that went into April bill. Is that kind of heads up?
Yes. Any other questions?
And then, Lisa, just so I'm clear, yeah, I've got one more.
Okay.
So in updates to the 2021 drought response plan, are the levels going to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or is there going to be that 3.5?
Correct.
What I was hearing was you're just using the 3.5 tonight. Okay, so you are going to use the 3.5?
No, we'll use the 1 through 6. The 3.5 was just for clarification of tonight of where the level we generation actually added fit in.
Okay. And do we need to review anything again, or can we approve just based on what you've shown tonight?
You could say that you approve the update based on the information that was presented tonight, and then I can bring I can bring a final copy of that. Well, we will have a final copy of that at the rate hearing / board meeting on May 19th.
Perfect.
And I'll send that out for review.
Wow.
Any other questions?
So do we need a motion to move forward on this?
Mm-hmm. You want to go back to the agenda?
Bueller?
So there's a motion. Or two motions.
Right.
Yeah. So to approve the updated Mountain Regional Water Special Services Drought Response Plan.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Aye. Anyone opposed? Okay, that's unanimous.
And then we just also need to do another motion for consideration of the district's drought response level for 2022, which would be level 4 of the updated drought response plan. Because I think we just,
yeah.
I think he just said plan.
Okay, can
not
we have a motion?
Level.
Can we have a motion on the drought level?
No, no, we've got it on the agenda.
I sent out an updated one, Mike, yesterday.
Is it not an updated
it's
agenda?
Two. It's 4 and 4A need to both be approved.
Gotcha. So it's, yes, this.
And then that.
And then
that.
Oh, got it.
The updated 2021 and
the. Motion to approve the district's route response level for 2022.
Okay, and that was Ian and Mike. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, that's unanimous.
Looks like Joel's frozen on my side.
Yep, he just got dropped.
Uh-oh.
Nope, there he is.
I didn't do it.
Well, that was a lot of work, guys. I really appreciate you indulging us in going through all that.
It's our pleasure. I mean, I will say I'm glad we had a framework.
Yeah.
And it was just that. It was simply a framework. So we needed to use the framework, dive in. Like I said, we're trying to do the best we can using that framework, but we will learn things. And so we will likely have to adjust again once we go through this summer. But I feel good about the plan framework we had in place, and I also feel good about the drought response plan the fund we established last year. That's really going to help with us not exactly knowing how the response will go. Okay, so I just 30 minutes. We didn't quite.
Hey, I think we should, Joel, how much of that did you miss that we voted to approve the level? You catch that and we...
No, I didn't get you, but, you know, I approved both 2021 and 2022 plans. I think they're really good. I just can't stress the communication that Joel needs for these plans.
Okay. Yeah, we'll do the best to get it out to everyone.
Okay, so we're on to number 5, the consideration of approval of the Pine Meadows Mutual Water Company Memorandum of Agreement for Wholesale Water.
So we talked about Pine Meadows in the past. Pine Meadows is up next to the Stagecoach area, northern Summit County, I guess you would call it. And we've been in discussions with them about a possible annexation. Earlier this year, we started entertaining, while we work through that process of what an annexation looks like and do an engineering evaluation. In the interim, we wanted to put a wholesale water agreement in place to help that community kind of secure a stable source of water for the near term. So Dave Thomas with Summit County drafted this agreement for us. It has been approved by Dave, approved by district staff, and as well as Pine Meadows board. So we'll go through, I guess, we'll go through the terms here. We are currently, like I said, working with Pine Meadows on an annexation. So So we, in the past, had an emergency interconnect with them, and we're turning that original MOU into this wholesale water arrangement. While we work through that annexation, this will be a term of 5 years, and which we have a table in here. As it relates to Pine Meadows, they do not have outdoor irrigation, only indoor water. So we've been through their billing records to determine what an appropriate amount would be to allocate them on an annual basis. It's included in this chart. We've used our wholesale water rate that we established for our regionalization water with Weber Basin and populated into this table and dollars per thousand gallons. We will monitor this water delivered to Park City, or to Park City, I'm sorry, to Pine Meadows each month. We are recommending the volumes. Can you scroll down a little bit, Chris? While we have the annual maximum set, we are asking them to follow this estimate per month per the contract term. So you can see we're looking at the bottom there in acre feet. The first year will be 28 acre feet, and it increases to 51 acre feet by the end of 2027.
Can I ask a question on that?
Yes.
So they don't have outdoor watering, but I notice it still peaks in June, July, and August. Is that just because more people live up there in the summer?
Yep.
Okay.
More people live up there in the summer.
Yeah, it's just vacation residents. People from the valley come up for the weekends.
I think someone may have an indoor swimming pool.
They don't know how to plow their roads, so a lot of those places.
You can't get in. Yeah.
Summer cabins.
If the annual volumes are exceeded by the total, they will be assessed at the district's current adopted retail rate. And we also put in here 1.3, it is a restriction, shall be used only for indoor, and they will be subject to all drought restrictions imposed by the district on its own customers. The 10% would be applicable in this case. Can you go down a little bit? We talked about the term, actually 68 months if we run it through 2021. So the district election, section 3, we are working on the evaluation right now, and this basically indicates that on or before May 1st of 2026, we will provide a letter of intent to Pine Meadows on either agreeing to move forward with an annexation or agreeing to guarantee a long-term water supply contract in perpetuity. With rates similar to what we show in figure 1.1 above. And I think the rest of it is kind of boilerplate from Dave Thomas. Those are the larger terms of the agreement. There was, if you go down a little bit, Chris, a discussion about binding arbitration that that Pine Meadows wanted to put in, but Dave Thomas asked that we pull that out, and Pine Meadows agreed. So Pine Meadows and their attorneys, are good with this agreement and are just looking for our board's approval so that we can move forward with delivery starting in May. Any questions?
All right, we have a motion to approve the Pine Meadows Mutual Water Company Memorandum of Agreement for Wholesale Water.
So moved.
Thank you, Ian. Do we have a second? Okay, that was Mike.
I'll second.
Okay.
Joel got kicked out.
Oh.
Well, we have three anyway.
Yep.
Okay, so all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, and anyone opposed? Okay, so that's unanimous, pending getting Joel back. Okay, and then the next is consideration of the district engineer and staff engineer job description.
Can you just bring up the memo? So we have two revised job descriptions that were included in the packet. Both job descriptions have been used by the district in the past. These aren't new job descriptions. We did need an update to the job responsibilities that was asked for by the board. So I guess just a little bit of background prior to Scott Morrison's departure. We were evaluating the possibility of a district engineer and a staff engineer. With that departure, we think this is an opportunity to maybe accelerate that time frame to give Sam some additional resource with internal engineering department. And so these two job descriptions just get us in a spot where we can start having those conversations and potential budget adjustments if we need to to add an additional staff to the engineering department. Were there any questions on the updates to the job descriptions?
Can you scroll down so we can, please?
Do you want me to bring them actually up?
Yes, please.
And so the intent here is that Sam would be the district engineer?
Correct.
Okay, so it's mainly just tweaking Sam's description or title and then getting a staff engineer underneath them.
Yes, and I got Sam's input on the responsibilities between the district and the staff engineer position. And you know, a lot of that feedback on how the responsibilities would lie came from Sam. I did also forward this to David Warnock for his approval, and he did not have any comments or red lines. He said they looked good. So Summit County's HR director has approved them. So these would just need approval by our board, and that we wouldn't need to go to Summit County to get additional approvals, and then we could, once we have these job descriptions in place, start those discussions about a potential new hire. Did you have a certain spot you wanted us to go to, Mike?
No, thanks, Chris. I'm bachelor's.
Let me know if you want me to toggle to the staff. And Joel is back.
That's fine. Thanks.
Joel's back. If you want me to ask.
Yeah, Joel, while you're back, we approved the Pine Meadow Mutual Water Company Memorandum of Agreement. Are you on board with that as well?
Yes, I am on board with that.
Okay, great. So do we have any comments, or are we ready to approve the district engineer and staff engineer job description?
I can walk through them in detail if you want to. Or I just didn't, what time, I want to be respectful of that. But if you want me to walk through them in detail, we can.
I'm good voting. I read through them.
Yeah, I'm ready to vote.
Okay.
Motion to approve district engineer and staff engineer job descriptions as presented.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, Ian, and seconded by Joel. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, anyone opposed? Okay, that's unanimous. Okay, we are ready to move on to number 7, consideration of approval of a waiver for the new district general manager to live outside Summit County.
Sorry, we'll just have to. So the general Summit County contract template provides, there's a section that provides for the employee general manager in this case to reside within Summit County boundaries, and Mr. Garland resides outside of those boundaries. So we have a waiver of that residency requirement, section 11 of Andy's employment contract, which was approved by County Council yesterday afternoon. This was drafted by Dave Thomas, and it just needs Administrative Control Board approval, discussion and approval.
And you live in Midway, right?
Correct.
Okay. Okay, do we have a motion to approve?
Moved.
Okay, that's
sorry.
Mike. Was that Joel?
Yeah, it was Mike and then Joel.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Yeah, Joel?
Aye.
Okay.
Sorry.
Anyone opposed? Okay, that's unanimous. Okay. See, we're just clipping right along now. The 2022 Impact Fee Facility Plan work session.
Well, Karen.
Oh, and then what's the date of the agreement? Do we know? There was a blank on here.
Oh, it was yesterday.
Okay, so that's the 20th.
So I'll start.
Okay.
Nice being person again and just get this done.
I know.
I'll get that to David. So we also have, we're currently in the process of updating our impact fee facility plan. We met with a small board group, Karen and Ian, I think it was the end of March maybe, to kind of go over kind of some of the assumptions that we're using. I think we had a good work session, and we're just going to bring the work session to the full board for you to basically just, this is not an approval of an IFFP, this is simply where we're at, what our timeline looks like, kind of what some of our assumptions are going to be that will be in the IFFP that we will bring for board approval in June. So this is kind of an update on where we're at. So the Impact Fee Facility Plan, we're currently working on that IFFP and a corresponding impact fee analysis, is that what it's called, Steve? Which is the actual financial calculation of the impact fee, will be done together. We start with the IFFP, which then rolls you into the IFA. So right now we're doing a board meeting just to kind of give a work session where we are. I think for May, we thought that we may need, I don't think we will, based on where I think we are now, we won't need that additional work session in May. I think that May meeting will largely be focused on the drought surcharges. So we will bring that full impact fee facility plan to you for discussion and recommendations to the county council. This is one, I don't know, what do you want to say? One thing that the county council still likes to keep approval for is having the IFFP done. So once the board recommends that to the council, then we're looking to go to the county council for approval sometime in July. After we get that approval, we go straight into the impact fee analysis, which we complete with Zions Bank,
We will anticipate targeting an August 31st date to get that done. We have a template that we used in 2019, Steve.
Yes.
So I think it will, we put a new template together for the ISA within 2019, so I think that shouldn't be a very heavy lift to just repopulate it with the numbers that we have. But we will be working with Zions to get that completed and finalized, which we would then bring to, I guess I can't remember, Steve, how do we do that? Do we bring it for a discussion with the board in September?
Yeah,
and then we do adoption of those fees along with our budget, our 2023 budget, and then we adopt the 2023 impact fees at the same time, which would be effective the same time as the budget. And then, yeah, our impact fees are going to effect January 1st, 2023. Okay. So these are our level of service elements, which is a big part of our impact fee plan. You can see that water right number per acre foot. You can see it's been decreasing from our 2014 plan to our 2019 plan down to 2022. So we're at 0.4 acre feet for the water right component. The water source component is 0.61. Storage, 883 gallons, a little bit less than last year. And the water distribution is again dropping a little bit. That's just really a function, I think, of the type of customer that's coming on. We're getting a lot of townhomes, apartments, that more dense housing that's going in behind us in Silver Creek area. And so with that, with the conservation efforts we've been talking about, that number is just kind of trending in that direction. Do you have any other comments to add to that, Sam?
No, I
think
you nailed it.
Okay. So one of the big pieces of the IFFP that we're really starting to jump into and why we're doing another impact fee facility plan in 2022, we just did one in 2019, is really our source development. We've seen accelerating and excessive growth across the district. We had a 4-time increase in impact fees. We went from 735,000 impact fees in 2020 to almost 3.4 million in 2021, and we're budgeting 1.6 million.
Yeah, 1.6 for this year.
For this year. Again, that heavy growth in the silver. I'm sorry, what?
It's not an increase in, it's not an increase in the fee, it's how much we collected here.
Yeah, the fee was actually, yeah.
The fee went down, sorry, I didn't use the right word. This is just the total impact fee revenue that we were generating went.
In this side here, if you the 4 times increase.
Yeah, we're basically, we have about 120 connections on an average year, and we had about 400 people come in and pay an impact fee and a deposit last year. So 4 times as many people generated about 4 times as much money last year. But the fee was the same, it was just multiplied by a lot more.
Hey, this is Joel. A couple of things, at least one. There's accelerating growth across the district. You might, if you haven't, you might want to talk to Pat Pott as to what's coming down the pike as far as growth in the county, the San Juan Basin Planning Commission. And there may be some important growth patterns in houses and in townhomes and in condos and in just development in general. So just a suggestion. There's a lot coming down the pipe, I can say that. And that's the best guy to talk to, Pat or Peter Barnes.
Okay, yep, I know we've talked to Pat in the past just to make sure that for all of our forecasted growth projections that we're on target and we're not missing anything, and we've generally aligned with them, but that's a good point, Joel, that we'll continue open dialogue with him
to make sure that there isn't anything that's going to catch us by surprise.
Yeah, and then Silver Creek Village and Promontory, if you need any contact there, let me know. But I will say that Silver Creek Village is growing like crazy. Promontory is getting ready for more growth too. You've already know that, but I just want to repeat that so you know.
Yeah.
And if you need help, just let me know about Silver Creek and Promontory.
Okay. Thanks, Joel. And I guess one of the things that we'll talk about, or Sam will discuss and we've talked about in previous meetings, is this expansion of our Signal Hill Water Treatment Plant. This wasn't included in our IFSP in 2019. We did have included in there for source development a future well project and a potential treatment plant in the Willow Draw area up there in the Canyons Resort. But this treatment plant expansion idea really came from plant optimization efforts that started in 2020 with Jacob. As we started to identify areas of the plant and processes that could be improved, we did those optimization efforts last year. And at the end of last year, I can't remember who from Jacob, but was it, what's his name? He came and spoke to us here at Sinai Real Basin.
Yeah, Joseph.
Joseph, to like initiate that contract to start looking at these, a design effort, let's say, for the plant expansion. So we've been working with Jacobs on that. We've been working on those alternatives in the end of 2021. We were hoping for a phased approach. Unfortunately, that phased approach is not looking like something that's going to be able to work. So it's going to be an expansion effort that's going to be kind of a one-and-done type situation. The effort to date, we've done some scoping goals and objectives. We've done analysis of the existing plant and recommendations for upgrades and some conceptual level design and cost estimates that Sam will go through in the next slide.
Lisa, I had a question on that.
Okay.
What's the title of that slide? Is this really the need for additional source development?
Yes.
I don't understand.
Yes, the need for additional source development and the need for this the treatment plant expansion being proposed to help us get there, which was not contemplated in our 2019 impact fee facility plan. Obviously, like we just discussed, this excessive growth that we're seeing in the area is happening sooner than we anticipated.
I think just adding that word needs to the title, so it says needs for source development.
Okay.
Do you want to do the pros and cons list
here? Sure, why don't you walk through?
So there's kind of three scenarios we developed, and they're all fairly similar. They involve either new groundwater development, looking at a new well, and some sort of treatment plant expansion. So under scenario A, this focuses, pedal the floor, really going full out on pursuing the full treatment plant expansion, which would need 6 million gallons per day. And that number is important because it's essentially Mountain Regional's allocation and the Lost Canyon system. So we're working under the assumption that at some point in the future, the Lost Canyon system will need to be fully allocated and the treatment plant will need to meet that 6 MGD target. It doesn't have to happen right now, but at some point in the future it probably does need to happen. And the goals for the plant are improved finished water quality goals, resiliency to change, and that's kind of twofold, both new regulations that are coming down the pipe, or changes to the watershed and our source water. And you got a question, Mike? And the big watershed changes, the big boogeyman, I guess, is always the wildfire scenario. So under the current plant configuration, we're not confident we could treat water moving through, you know, a heavy wildfire scenario. We think we could do a better job with our chemical handling and improve operator safety at the plants. And then also importantly is kind of having true redundancy at the plant. So we can take a process offline for maintenance, lose a piece of that, but still meet our 6 MGD true rated plant capacity moving through the plant at all times. This last one, the pro column, is a bit of a leap. It's an assumption. It may be that if we take one whack at the plant expansion project to get to the 6 MGD, it may be less expensive than coming in with multiple tons and taking different whacks at the plant. The cons, the biggest one is right up front here, and it's the upfront capital cost, and that comes in around $25 million we have at our current conceptual cost estimate, which at least many of you can speak to this one. Increases the debt by 68%. That's alarming.
We don't have $25 million laying around impact fees. We were kind of hoping for more of a phased approach to this that would allow us to collect the impact fees, maybe not have to bond for as much, but this would definitely be, we would get into a bonding situation. Steve's had some initial discussions with Brian Baker at Zions Bank, and I'll let him speak to the financial aspects of it later on. But this was a little bit of a, when we were talking about a plant expansion, $25 million wasn't exactly the number we were thinking it was going to end up being. We thought it was something less than that, more like $12 to $15 number.
We've been good at decreasing our debt over the last several years and prepaying some debt, so this would take change that position, which Fitch has appreciated our debt to customer ratio. This would change that pretty significantly. So.
So that's a big con. You know, if we were in a better spot financially, maybe we wouldn't even be looking at these other scenarios. It's going to be a huge lift internally here at the district, in addition to having outside consulting support. And then this is a good point. It further ties the district to our exchange rights associated with Weaver Basin that are potentially subject to cuts via drug restrictions. And this last piece about duty target, we can chat about in the next few slides. So this chart represents our peak day water demands and peak day source production. So if everything that's coming into the system, subtracting everything that's coming out of the system as a demand, and then showing that as a ratio. And we call that our system duty. And our targeted system duty in the past for our source production was 75%. So we essentially have a 25% safety factor on our source production during the highest usage day of the entire calendar year, which is what we're designing around. So the green line in the chart represents that 75% figure. And the gray line in the chart with the yellow nodes represents usage. So in general, what we're trying to do is keep the green line above the gray line, pretty simply. And when we're not hitting that target, that's when we can identify and try and bring a source development project online. So, this scenario is showing plant expansion happening in 2026. Yep, 2026. And that's where you see the significant jump in the green line in the coming years. And that gets us all the way up to 2032 before we need to potentially consider additional source development. And
so is that 2026 date a start date of expansion or a completion date of expansion?
We will be making the plant come online for peak season of 2026.
And what's the projected construction period to expand?
2 years. It's a challenging construction project because we can't shut the plant down at any time in order to create these upgrades. So the plant has to stay running while we're also trying to build all the upgrades in the plant. which is one of the reasons about it's also been challenging from a phasing perspective. There's a number of reasons for that, but that is one of them. I think that's all I have on this one. And then here's just a general concept drawing of what this expansion could look like in its current conceptual form. So we have the existing treatment plant shown page down diagonally there with the rusted roof. And there'd be a new building constructed with a 10-foot setback. It'd be a slab-on-grade building to kind of maintain security of the existing structure and the pond, which is nearby, obviously. And basically, we'd be taking some processes that are in the plant and shifting them outside of this new building to make room for the expansion. And going from the top of the page down, those are, in broad terms, chemical handling, equalization for backwashes, and also solids handling. And then the last piece would be an ozone generation facility, which we're in which we would take a different approach to our gap contactors. And we target a biological process with ozone instead of our current adsorptive process with the granular activated carbon contactors we have. So that's what the project looks like. This is the existing plant configuration. The interior of the building is two record drawings kind of smashed together. And it has a very basic representation of the unit processes contained therein. Anything shown red on page right is where water enters the plant, and those are all tied to pre-treatment, the pre-treatment side of the plant. And then shown in green, those are the membrane skids, which really do the heavy lifting in our treatment process. And then finally moving to page left, shown in blue are gap contactors, which is a side stream tertiary process before the water finally exits to a storage tank where chlorine is injected and we get our chlorine contact tank. So in this plant expansion option, all the solids handling, anything shown in orange, is going to move outside the building. All chemical handling is going to move outside the building, providing more room for additional skids, more production to the plant. And we're also reclaiming the solids handling basin on the bottom page right corner where we can enhance our pre-treatment process and also accommodate for additional flow moving to the plant. So that's the broad strokes of the plant extension. Here's the cost breakdown again in broad terms. And again, we're showing that $25 million figure. There's two alternatives shown here, but they're kind of variations on the same theme. The only difference would be our approach with our gap contactors at the end of the plant.
But the preferred would be using the ozone, not the gap.
I think it makes a lot of sense. Yeah, the ozone is a really attractive option in that we could use our current gap contactors. We would not need additional gap contactors. We could pass 100% of our flow to the gap contactors, whereas now we put about 50% of our flow to the gap contactors. And also we would not have to purchase new carbon every year or even twice a year to get the adsorptive quality of the carbon, because the carbon would essentially become just a media for the biological activity. So it's really a shift in paradigm, I guess, on the polishing end.
And so a little more upfront cost, but lower maintenance costs or running costs over time because of the gap difference.
Yeah. Lower operating costs going forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, replacing the gap cycle manually is very expensive.
How much would that save per year?
Right now, gap replacing two vessels is about $130,000.
Okay. We have four.
And we have four. And Jacobs was suggesting we almost replace those annually if we kept it as working as it is. With the ozone, I think it moved to...
Yeah, it was
a long time.
It could be 10 years. I mean, it's essentially just, again, a bed for the biological activity. So as long as it's somewhat structurally sound, you wouldn't need to swap the gap out. And it's just, I guess, a coincidence more than anything that the granular activated carbon is also an excellent vessel for the treatment process, I guess. Mm-hmm. Okay, scenario B. In this scenario, we're kind of flopping the prioritization. So we're focusing on a well first, and then a plant. This could, I guess, reduce upfront capital costs and delaying the plant project. We can start working on a new well immediately, which is attractive. The cons are, you know, this plant expansion, whatever it looks like, is probably coming online at least 1 year later, just with the shift to district resources and focus. And then, of course, with any groundwater source production, we do not know what we're going to get out of that well. So
yeah,
we can be hopeful about it. But
do we know where?
We've got a couple locations that are attractive operationally, just, you know, actually having them in, but we have not even, we have not started the PR process of evaluating and citing the wells. So, no.
We have like two, right? I mean, if there's not a bunch.
Yeah. So the two primary locations are kind of Silver Creek area near the Equestrian Center and Promontory. That's an attractive option identified in the past. And then Brian's kind of got a...
What kind of,
go ahead, Mike.
What kind of a flow rate do we need out of it?
So, in all these, that's a great question. So, in all these projections, we're using 300 gallons a minute. And for the IFFP, for when these projects get phased and come online and all the calculations we're about to go through, we do have to set on some sort of flow rate to plug in to actually finish the plan. 300 gallons a minute was used in the 2019 IFFP, and we're just carrying that forward.
And just for like reference, I mean, we'd be kind of targeting something similar to Bison Bluffs, right? I mean, that's kind of pie in the sky, but what's Bison Bluffs currently make?
1,500.
Yeah, it's like 1,000 acre feet, I mean, a year, right?
It's one of the best, I don't know, kind of formations we have as a target, so
yep.
Up gradient from that, it kind of seems like low-hanging fruit. It sounds like you and Brian have thought about this for a while.
So yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it's easy to be pessimistic about the production, but we've got another Bison Bluff that totally changes the complexion of all these projections moving forward, so that would be a nice problem. Anything else, Kristen? You know, Ely stuff?
I feel like I just thought of something, but...
Separates the water rights stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it separates some of our dependency on Weber Basin.
A little bit?
You know, depending obviously on the production.
Yeah, where and where.
And where we actually take the water. So, you know, if it's on the East Canyon side, then it's, you know, it's quite possible it would be not tied to least water in the same way.
Mm-hmm. That's creed water rights associated.
And yeah. And I think just, and you know, as we've talked about before, just it's good for our groundwater management plan, right? I mean, we may lose a source. We don't know. We've been really fortunate that we haven't had an issue, but there could come a time, and this would just help us diversify that portfolio a little bit more.
Yeah, that's great.
And it's in the IFFP. We could do it now. It's just, do we want to do it, or do we want to just move forward with the full treatment plan expansion?
That's cool. The second well,
Reddish,
is Quarry Mountain area, close to our whole range pump station. It's kind of the other one we've been throwing around. So here's what that chart looks like. Again, focusing on the green dotted line, the reason you don't see big uptick there when the new well comes online in 2023, is we are also losing, not permanently, but we're losing the Spring Creek Spring as a groundwater source. So in order to utilize the Spring Creek Spring in the future, we'd have to treat it like any other surface water source, and that'd be a robust treatment process. So we're in our projections, we're making plans on moving forward without the spring if we have to. And in this projection, you know, during our peak 3 to 4 week period, the spring kind of puts out about 300-375 GPM historically. So they compensate for each other, and that's why you kind of see a consistent green line moving forward there. And then, of course, the big jump there is the plant expansion to 6 MGD, again, the full plant expansion. And then we're showing it 2027 in this slide.
Yeah, so a year later than the previous predictions.
Sam, how do we come to terms with the gap between the green line and the gray line right there? You know, yeah.
That's great.
How do we?
That's a great question, Mike. We have historically in 2020 had a similar duty factor, and it was uncomfortable, but the district was able to, you know, make it through peak season. And during that season, we actually lost a couple of groundwater sources on top of that duty factor. So, potentially, if growth continues how it is, and if water demands increased back to the 2020 levels, you know, prior to our drought messaging, things like that, it's possible we could be in an uncomfortable situation. But I think the trade-off is probably, in my estimation, worth it in order to plan and ultimately have a good product that we'll be happy with, you know, not just for the next 5-10 years, but through the whole design life of the treatment plant.
So I guess it comes down to the duty factor.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's going to, what would it drop down to there at where the gap between the biggest?
How far into the duty factor are we?
We're in the low 80s.
And tell me, we still have a cushion, we just don't have a comfortable cushion.
It's below our target.
Yeah. But this is also, we know that, well, we don't know, but we're going to assume that usage is going to go down this year.
Yeah, so.
Per customer, based on the drought restrictions we're putting in place. The number that we have played around with this in this model a bit is how much per customer are we putting in. So I think we've been conservative in our estimates here, and it's likely higher than what is actually going to happen. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I completely agree. Yeah, that's a great point, Lisa. So on our projection moving forward, in order to turn a growth projection into water use, what we do is we look at the past 3 years of actual water use and then scale up the added ERCs by that factor, if that makes sense. And the usage per customer next year, most certainly, I think, to your point, is it's going to drop significantly with water restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
But also just in general.
Right, that might,
go ahead,
that might be a good note for the wide is that the demand projection is without drought conservation. And I think it helps that it feels like we're going to come down to how do we feel about having less than 75%.
Yeah, that's a good part.
I mean, we have to run things harder than 75%.
Yeah. I mean, short term, I think we have a lot more visibility on what's going to happen, A, in water usage, and B, in ERC growth, the impact fees we've collected. But, you know, beyond maybe a 5-year window, then I don't know, we need something to go off of, and we're making assumptions. You know, this is a projection.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, I think it's just in this 22 to 27 window.
Yeah.
You could do one with and one without. I mean, you could note it without drought restrictions, and then we could estimate what we want to do with drought restrictions, and then have another table that shows up.
No, I don't think it's. I think it's. I'd like to know what the duty factor is.
Okay, so we can put some.
Well, it's 20%, low 80.
Yeah, you can put that on there.
Sure. Yeah, we can
help. But yeah, that sliding, that 3-year sliding average usage is trending down rather than trending up. So if that continues, our gray with yellow should trend a little lower than what this is showing.
Yeah, absolutely. So every year we go through this, we should have better data. And if we have another year with low water usage, that's of course going to drag everything down when we look at a rolling average. And then if that's the case, which it will be this year, this projection will look better. yeah. or however you want to say that.
We'll come closer to our duty factor.
The duty factor will be lower.
Yeah.
Yes. But again, at this point, I think the input, the assumptions we're putting into this chart, I think we need to be consistent and justifiable in how we do that. And that's kind of what I've chosen to put in there. So scenario C. So we again with our work with Jacobs, we're going to see a lot of opportunities for phasing due to a number of factors. So we feel that we need to come up with another treatment plant alternative, and kind of have the main priority be trying to keep upfront capital costs under control, but also increase in production to the plant at a rated capacity with redundancy that we feel good about. So I think a good target for this project, which we have not designed, is around 4.1 million gallons per day, just based on different scenarios with adding a membrane skid and what we currently have in the plant. This would, of course, the main goal here is going to reduce upfront capital costs. And again, take one step back. Scenario C is this modified treatment plant expansion project in conjunction with a well. So a lower price project of the treatment plant and a well concerned. So another pro here is a new well, we can start working on that immediately. And it buys us another year to have the treatment plant online in 2027. And I think that's probably the soonest date we could probably get there, starting back from the ground up and designing a new treatment plant alternative. The cons are, in order to reduce cost of this treatment plant project, we have to pull some goals, scope, however you want to think about that, outside of the project. And those could include finished water quality improvements, big resiliency goals. The wildfire scenario is an obvious one to try and not meet in the future. That's a big cost driver if we kind of take that off the table, except some additional risk of, a wildfire is going to be such a irregular event that we can accept the risk there. And then, really don't want to drop any operator safety off, but, standalone chemical building is something else that could come out of the scope of this project. And the cons are it continues to be a large impact on staff resources. We don't have a great cost estimate because we need to design the project to a conceptual level. And we're likely going to have to take another stab at the treatment plant to get to that 6 MGD number. So that's scenario C.
Chad, why didn't you put the cost or the debt requirement there? No.
It's not the $25 million number.
But we're not sure what that number is.
We haven't
sculpted it out properly.
Yeah. But unfortunately, it could be a $25 million number, right?
Yes. We've taken a swag at when we get to some potential rate increases at it being about half. So you're kind of getting half the cost, but only one more MGD versus three more MGD.
Has Brian Baker indicated where he thinks bonds are going, the cost?
For right now, it was kind of telling us they're going up because with the land purchase, the county has made us an offer to buy it through them and them help finance it. And he kind of said that's probably a good deal because of bonding costs. The other things right now. So
this is the scenario C chart. Again, it's kind of a mashup of the last couple. We see the well coming online, cancels out the loss of the spring, and then we see it jumped up 4.1 million gallons per day in 2027. And again, potentially at that point, so what happens with growth? We may already be at a point where we're looking at source development again. And it could go the other way. The economy could slow down and maybe we'd be in a much more comfortable position. But with our current projection, that's what that looks like. And then just at a very basic level, this is the same slide as we had before for the existing plant configuration. In order to really get the cost down, I think we need to look at eliminating an exterior building. So one idea would be to essentially eliminate our entire pretreatment system, run the plant as a direct filtration system, try and reclaim the space so we still have the equalization to do our GAC backwashes and things of that nature, and even potentially investigate a connection with sewer to pass our solids along to, which would eliminate the solids handling from the current plant. So that'd be a way to try and use every square inch of the facility we have, keep costs down, but still try and squeeze more production out of the plant. So that's one possible concept.
The solids handling could also be something that would reduce the cost on the full treatment plant expansion, right?
Absolutely.
If we could get that, and that's a few million, isn't it, I think?
Yep.
So that's, I think, an option that you've been looking into.
And have we asked what the projected cost of handling the solid?
That's a good question. So, yes, we have asked, and we're in discussions on whether it's even possible for a number of reasons. The impact is on the order of magnitude of $1.25 million. And then we would have the ongoing monthly sewer bill. And in addition to the configuration of the sewers designed in Promontory, we would need to utilize two pump stations to lift the wastewater out of Promontory, and we'd have to share in the cost of those. So they're significant. But they have a lot of upsides. We get space back in the plant, it becomes easier operationally, and we don't have to throw as many staff resources at our solid handlers, which are significant. Pros and cons.
So kind of walking through what this might mean to our customers and potential rate increases. So on the left, just those, I've got three categories. So there's three different scenarios, and I've got kind of three numbers. The debt service ratio, including all revenue, debt service ratio without impact fees. We always like to keep that in mind, just in case impact fees, if we hit a recession and we don't have a lot of new connections. And then our parity debt service ratio, that is 1.25 required by our bonds. So if we looked at the full treatment plant and then a well 17, the well wouldn't have to come on until outside this 5-year window. So, but we would be looking at most likely a rate increase in next year of 10%, and then in 2024 of 15%, and then we could kind of go back down to more, let's say, typical 6.35. The reason we don't target hit right at 125 is you don't want to mess around with going beyond your bond covenants. Plus, if we look at that without impact fees, the amount over one is what we generate to do capital projects. Kind of a one would mean you're breaking even. So without it being above one, we couldn't do any new capital projects. So we usually try to budget that 1.5, 1.6. You'll see usually our budgets go out at that. So I've tried to mirror those numbers. They don't work exactly the same because of timing and what is ratio and what's not kind of things. But so full treatment plant, we kind of have to bite the bullet right now, roll out a couple of big in-price rate increases for our customers the next 2 years, and then kind of stabilize. If we did the well first in either of those two scenarios, you'll see those numbers are kind of the same the first couple of years. They're exactly the same for the first couple of years. We take the well, it's about $1.1 million estimate from Aqua right now. We fund that out of impact fees, but we start to build the rate so that when the full treatment plant expansion comes on in 2025, we'd be looking at a 14% rate increase, and then 5 and 5 after that. Again, we don't have good numbers on the modified treatment plant. So you'll see it runs the same as the full. It goes 8.8, but instead of the 14, we would maybe project out at 10. So we maybe save a 4% rate increase to our customers in that year by doing a modified instead of a full. Again, assuming a modified of about half the cost of a full treatment plant expansion. So this is where we just have to kind of gauge that appetite of our customers being willing to accept rate increases to have you know, undeterred water at peak season, or whether we'd want to have to put in restrictions, whether they'd really rather have restrictions around that July-August time frame, kind of like what we're doing this year, where we don't have to do the big treatment plant expansion if you'll only water twice a week, you know, in those time frames. So that hasn't been our history. So it's early on. We run this rate model every year after we get the new expenses new, and we put it back in and see where it's at. I would hope these estimates, if anything, are a little high. But it does give you kind of a ballpark of we've got a nice period where we'll have gone 4 years without a rate increase. So this first year, I think, is pretty easy to explain 8 to 10% given inflation and things like that. But then we could get into kind of having to piggyback that with another one. We're going to have to do some explaining to customers, no doubt. But just to kind of give you a magnitude of scope of what this decision will end up costing to our customers. A lot. Part of, and we didn't hit on this too much. Mike, go ahead.
It looks like it's about 40 to 50% price increase.
Yeah, scaled up over time. The debt, because our customers have only had to service roughly $35 million in debt, and we're going to add $25 million to that. So, I think at least it was the 68% increase in debt with only a 10% growth in customers. You know, we have to make up that difference in revenue. The one good thing, and kind of that's come out of the drought, is instead of that being a flat 8 to 10% across every customer, we found what we're really targeting is that's much more revenue we need from sales. So it could come from increasing the tiers, the high usage tiers, and just kind of those who are almost forcing us to do this expansion, paying for a bigger part of it, so that it's not an 8% increase to a 5,000 gallon a month customer, but it's maybe a 3% increase to them, a 10% to kind of middle of the road, and maybe our real big users that are kind of forcing this, proportionally they get a 15% rate increase. But it nets out as an overall 10% increase to revenue. So there's some different ways we can get to that number, let's say, playing with base and usage rates. I'm just short and sweet tonight. I just drop the bad news and then I move on.
I'll talk about these. These are other source considerations that we had. The ones in black are currently in our IFSP. We talked about the pump capacity expansion at Lost Canyon, about 200,000. Willow Drawwater Treatment Plant, which is currently in the IFSP. I think that was pretty. That $1.1 million number needs to be adjusted.
Is that old? Treatment plant's still there, or they're gone?
It's still there.
The building is there.
Yeah.
The insides are gone. Got it.
Yeah. The two in blue there are things that we've been talking about that are not in the IFSP. The Spring Creek Spring that Sam mentioned. Summit Water is currently pilot testing a membrane plant, right? Or membrane? I think it's membrane.
Oh,
it's what?
I'm not sure what they're playing, but yeah, a membrane and cartridge.
Oh, cartridge, something up there right now. So we have been in touch with them. They were kind of running with that to see if we could maybe partner with them on a solution. I don't know Sam or Chris. I think Sam's been in touch. Or no, who was talking to Dave? Brian. Yeah, so we'll continue to chat with them about what the results are from that testing. And we have redevelopment of some wells that we think we can do that we haven't used in the past, but there's definitely, I think, some source development that we could do to rehab some of those wells that we just haven't used in the past that would definitely help add to some of that. It's not to the level of the treatment plant, but it's just some options as we start to consider what other things are out there. And like Steve mentioned, this is going to be our customer tolerance for rate increases versus potentially watering restrictions or, paying for a treatment plant expansion for peak delivery. Storage, we're pretty good on storage. We're working on the Summit Park Tank 1 replacement, and that's
our last storage project. So with the big 2 million gallon tank that we did a few years ago, that was our big storage push on our IFFP. So we have this one remaining, and then we think we'll be set with storage. Distribution, I think, is the last one. Distribution projects in our IFFP. We will continue with the item in dark there, the black, the South Point line size upgrade, Old Ranch surge tank, Red Hawk pump station capacity upgrade, and Silver Creek Estate pipeline extension. Chris's Loop has been included in the IFFP. That could potentially also be done by a developer, depending on some projects that are happening over in that Silver Creek area. We've also talked about potentially, but it sounds like maybe Sam's tucking us off the ledge on any promontory transmission upgrades that we thought we might have needed to get the water, the increased water from the expansion plant across the road, across the 40. We think we might be okay there, though. So the distribution projects largely remain the same. Really, like we said before, it's that source development that's causing the redo of our IFFP. I think that was the last one. And this is just, like I said, it's informational, no decision. Just wanted to get your feedback and input on your thoughts on, you know, kind of those different scenarios. If you think the treatment plant expansion that we currently have been talking about with Jacobs is the right direction to head in. We've already kind of gotten in that design phase. We could continue that approach, but it does come at a cost. And we are in a little bit of uncharted territory with customer usage right now and the significant growth we've seen, but we just kind of have to make some decisions as far as, you know, going ahead with that full one. We would include that as part of our 10-year plan in the IFFP, so those costs would be significant and would roll in to that IFFP. Like I mentioned before, that IFFP rolls into our impact fee analysis, which would then generate the new impact fee rate, which I have no idea what that looks like now based on the assumptions, you know, the $25 million and our level of service. We need to see how all those roll into the IFFP, take that information and put it into the IFA and see where our impact fee comes out.
And even if the impact fee goes up, it doesn't guarantee an increased revenue if growth slows, if development slows. So even though it could go up significantly, we could still have lower revenue overall. So part, and say this, but the treatment plant, usually the reason you have the 10-year window is that you can kind of have 10 years to collect or have it in the impact fee analysis. So you're collecting money to help pay for that over 10 years. Unfortunately, because the treatment plant wasn't in the 2019 and we need it by 2027, we kind of only get 5 years of being able to collect on it instead of 10. So that's where, unfortunately, it pushed some of the cost of it to our ratepayers rather than impact fees. So just a little.
You just raise it to like $250,000 and then we only need 5.
Yeah. Yeah. Just one big colony cut down.
So, okay. But yeah, I think the work
plan
right
now. What are people? I'm curious on people's temperature on a well.
Well, it's based on our experience with the last well. I know everybody's a little gun shy, and I would even guess, just knowing what I know from Andy, talking to him, that you know Andy's probably not jumping on the well bandwagon either. So.
And the high use well was over 2 million, and at 2,515 feet, it's oil field technology to get it out there, and the electrical cost alone. Make it really expensive to get. I can't remember what it was. I think it was like 120, and then when the state cut it back, it's like less than 100 gallons a minute.
That's a good point too. Also, these smaller, energy-intensive, less production sources, like smaller gun wells, are much more energy-intensive on a per-gallon basis than, something like the Bison Blossom, for example, or the Lost King. That's another consideration. We didn't really discuss it, but that's a good point.
In the IFFP, you'll see the full treatment plan expansion. We'll put that on there, but just so that it's in and part of the IFA, the analysis, so we get as much, and then we can always, if we don't do it, that's okay, but that doesn't mean we don't still need to make this decision at some point, so Sam can give Jacob the right direction to run, I guess, here shortly.
Outside of the IFFP, in order to meet these
time frames.
It's tight, I think, even as it is right now, with trying to hit 2026.
Even if we went full gun, full treatment plan expansion. Which?
So do we think we'll need the full treatment plan expansion in the future? Even if we didn't need it to come online in 2026, aren't we going to need a full expansion at some point to maximize Lost Canyon?
Yes.
The only reason,
I guess, what would the... Oh, go ahead, Steve.
The only reason that the full treatment plan expansion at the 6th MGD would not be necessary at some point in time is if Weber Basin got to the point with water conditions that they actually cut our leases. So we would never need to put that much water through it, which they haven't done. But if we, how can I say it, like if the drought restrictions turned somehow more permanent and we weren't going to ever have to meet that, then in theory the treatment plant would be overbuilt. But if that doesn't happen, we would need it at some point in time. Is that fair to say, Sam?
Yeah. Okay.
We don't know. I mean, that's like a shot. That's like, are we going to have a wildfire? I don't know.
I think it's a fair assumption. We don't have a real detailed build-out analysis just on the nature of the district and annexing other water systems is a challenge, but going off like Snyderville Basin numbers in our area, they project they're about 50% built out. The last thing I've seen, so that sounds about right. So if you assume that's the same for Mountain Regional, then at some point I would say, yes, we're going to meet that build-out condition in Lost Canyon system. And we should before we consider an importation project on the order of hundreds of millions of dollars.
Well, Mike was talking about doing a $100 million upgrade here.
Yeah.
$110 million.
Right, so Lost Canyon will obviously be water hanging fruit, for the entire basin, as opposed to the next step, which that may be a certainty even in the future. Hopefully, that's a long ways out, but we're operating, I'm operating under the assumption that 6 MGD will happen very likely sometime in the future. It's just when is the unknown piece. Mm-hmm.
And Ian and Karen, you may have picked up on, we dropped one scenario from our work session, and that of buying water from Park City through Quinn's Junction. Doesn't mean it isn't still on the table at some point in time, but if the Quinn's Junction treatment plant somehow became a regionalization plant, that could impact some need for full treatment plant or ground source if we had a deal with them to just buy water.
It sounded like the ability to expand that plant, though, was extremely limited. Based on the regionalization meeting we went to.
Well, I think it's just a time. Well, right now they're using it until their Three Kings plant comes on.
Yeah.
And then, from my understanding from Clint, then it's going to be kind of just they need to put a certain amount through, but it's not really, it's enough to just keep it going. But then I think, I'm not sure, maybe you know, Andy, I thought that had talked about potentially being a regionalization plan at some point. Because I'm not sure Park City's going to need it.
Yeah.
Where is it? But they still need to pay for it.
But they had to pay for it. So if they could sell the water to somebody that, if they're needed, this is the thing that gets a little, if we were more interconnected, but if we were one water entity and we've got a treatment plant that's not being used at the bottom of, where we can get water to it, but we're redoing an expansion up here, but there's one that's kind of empty down here. How does that, how could that potentially come into our thinking or projecting on that?
We buy that for $25 million.
Yeah, or buy a piece of it. Some of water needs water. How could we, maybe Park City wants to, monetize that plant that maybe they don't need anymore? I don't know. I'm just trying to think big picture on how we utilize the existing assets in the basin without having to do an importation project. That benefits everyone in the basin.
All right.
So, yeah, I guess from a ratepayer's point of view, you know, a 40% increase to pay for expansion that really went to serve growth is, you know, that's not very palatable. And so, I think these ideas of how to lessen that are really important, or how to shift the responsibility to the growth. I guess we missed 5 years, but...
Well, I think out of the 40%, we should probably be looking at that about half of that. I mean, and I'm just really shooting from the hip here, is due to the treatment plant. We would still have, you know, several years of inflation and rate increases. Because we haven't had one, then we had the big inflation spike. So with or without the treatment plant, I think we're doing an 8 or 10 in 2023. Now, what it might mean is that the other years are 5, and there's not the 10 or 14s, but we would not be without rate increases.
I think the other thing to note, Stephen, I don't think we've said that, is we do have, you do have the debt service on an office in these projections.
Yeah, that's part of the difference in it is, yeah, we do have, all of these projections have an office with a debt service of about $10 million.
So if we decided to not do our office, if maybe we decided to purchase the land from the county, hold on to it, get through this expansion, you know, and do an office maybe a little bit later down the road, or phase the office. We have some rough estimates on what we think the office will be, but we have two separate facilities, a maintenance facility and then an administrative building. So maybe we could try to phase it and do our maintenance, get our maintenance guys and bays what they need now that they've been short with for a while, and then maybe look to do that second part of the administration building down the road.
That could spread out the rate increases.
Yeah. So these are kind of like worst case scenario, I guess you could say.
Sure. I don't want to come back and have to say they've got to be higher for any reason, let's say, for sure. So.
Okay.
Capital projects, Sam.
Real quick update here. Both of our Tier 1 projects, the Summer Park tank water replacement and the Woodland water line, are going to drop off because we're constructing them next year, as we've discussed the past board meeting. So just expect that on a quarterly update moving forward. And then I got into details for review on kind of our Tier 3 or internally managed projects for the board's review. And the one thing to note there is, given our large construction projects are getting delayed in construction season, I pulled the Red Hawk Booster Pump Station project into 2022, which may end up being a little bit ambitious, but I thought we could try and still get a fair bit of work done in the district this year. So that's going to start getting tracked both on the schedule and the quarterly capital project updates. So keep looking out for those. And if anybody has any specific questions, happy to answer those, but I'll try and keep it short.
Dan, do any of these address the safety issue with the number of our underground faults?
Yeah, two of them. So the KLD Booster Pump Station upgrade and the Spine Booster Pump Station upgrade, both of which we're targeting to happen this year, are kind of two parts, either structural or building retrofit, and then getting all the electrical, data cabinets, etc., above grade and out of the vault. So I think those are going to turn out both really nice, and they're tracking fairly well, I'd say, all things considered.
Yeah, Kilby.
That's great. Thanks for doing.
I was going to say Kilby should be done in, you know, by second week in May. So.
Cool. How many does that leave us with on your kind of wish list to kind of address that safety concern? Like, how many are outstanding you want to get up to grade?
Cool. And those are kind of the big ones.
Still the majority of our vaults are below grade. Some of them are not going to be practical at all to be able to get above grade, either because of vault locations being inside of right-of-ways and things like that. These were kind of the priority ones that were sort of where we're in and out of them on a regular basis.
Yeah, the other piece we're leveraging existing above-ground infrastructure. Both these had buildings already retrofitted over the vault, so we're either expanding and improving those and then bringing the cabinets above. So after these, which were really important things, then things get a little bit more in-depth, I guess.
Right. Well, support it either way, so thanks for the update.
Hey, Steve, what do you have for us?
How quick do we want to do this tonight? Chris, would you mind polling?
Yep.
Okay. I will definitely try to hit just the highlights.
Okay.
So on page 2, kind of our summary box of debt position, we're $400,000 better than budget, made up of being $270,000 above budget for revenue and $138,000 below on expenses. Chris, go ahead and go to the next box. Revenue, retail water sales are running right on budget, very close, 1% off, just $16,000 above. Park City Wheeling is really close to what was expected. We rate the regional supply water. Development-related collections are higher than budgeted. A lot of that is promontory that have had a lot of assessments paid. Impact fees, scroll down just a little. Oh, maybe that was on the
first.
Yeah.
Pay on the take or pay contract there.
Uh-huh.
If that comes out, if we reduce and we don't use it all, do we still, do we get any relief there?
We have to pay Weir Basin all of our lease fees, and Weir Basin has to pay us all of the fee for the contracted water, whether there's a cut or not. So we paid them about 1.8 in December, and then over the year, they're going to pay us about 1.1 for the water that we wheel over to Summit Water, and that does not change. But the drop is from last year we were selling them 1,100 acre feet. This year we're only selling them 700 acre feet. And kind of as you do look at that right column, see how it dropped 180,000 from Weber Basin, but we've added back 117,000 from retail water sales. So basically that was always planned. That is, we stopped selling water to Weber Basin. It's because we needed it internally and would be selling it to our own customers. So it's not perfect math, but that's kind of the guesses. The estimates worked well to saying when that started to phase down and when we would start to need it ourselves. Impact fees were at about 298,000. Budget was 260. So we're pretty close on impact fees, not like last year. go ahead and go down a little bit. Kind of the March sales were pretty close in all the categories. We were a little under budget on residential and a little over on standby. What that kind of tells me is that some of our standby customers aren't becoming water using customers quite as quickly as I probably projected earlier. Go ahead and scroll down. Operating expenses. We're good. Operations and maintenance is below budget. Non-OM&R are also below. Depreciation, we're right on kind of expectations. The interest expense, which I mentioned before, I think in our last meeting, budgeting last year, there was an amortization error in, so it's not a cash expense, it's amortizing an old cost that was not included, so that we will have to amend the budget at the end of the year just on the interest expense. So no additional cash. It doesn't impact any of our ratios, but there is a little variance there that's going to continue out throughout the year till we amend it. Go ahead and scroll down if you would, Chris. Cash, we're in a good cash position. We're at 374 days of operating cash and reserves. Last year we were at 332 days. You'll see the big jump from last year. A big part of that jump is in that debt reserves held by the district. that's impact fees that we're sitting on until we spend those. And you can see the draft reserve fund that's been formed. Okay.
Now that we're over 365, are we going to sweep any of that into...
No, we don't have to do that until the end of the year. We can leave it kind of flexible. Okay. We don't have to commit it to anything else. Lisa and I, at our last Weber Basin meeting, we were talking with them and kind of picking up on some industry trends. The 120 days as a minimum is probably too low. We probably need to make that higher. A lot of entities operate with more than a year's worth of operating reserves
okay.
in this industry. So, growth, we're at 86 new connections paid for this year versus 109 last year, but well above the four-year average. So our growth is still very high, but not as high as last year. If that, and then Promontory is kind of the same. Last year they sold 29 lots. This year they're at 26, but the four-year average was 12. So growth is still very good, not but just not quite as high as last year. Water consumption, I put down, it's pretty predictable this time of year, so that's why revenue is easier to predict this time of year. Our customers, down just a little bit more, use 240 acre feet in today so far through the year. We've wheeled 654 acre feet to Park City. Summit Water's taken 220 acre feet of the 700 acre feet allocation. Which will have a little bit of a trim due to the drought. So total acre feet delivered is basically where we were last year. And that's about it. This is just more detailed breakdown if anybody wants to get in and look at that, at where the revenue variances are and variances to budget and expenses. Ian, this is... we met and talked about this today, and I'm going to do some further modification to this. So we're going to group them by residential customers and commercial customers instead of just alphabetically. But let me draw your attention to a couple of things. So large residential, in 2021, in March, we built 1,325. And on average, so it's about 5.8 million gallons, so 4,365 gallons per customer for that month. In 2022, now we're up to 1,410 large residential customers, so a growth of 85 customers. As you can see, they've actually not only in total used less water, but also as a percentage. So our large residential customers in March this year only used 3,887 gallons, versus last year they used 4,300. So we're seeing a 10% reduction in usage per person already, kind of the indoor requirement of Weber Basin. Residential, kind of, let's look at that. Those are our two big ones. Last year we had 1,983 residential customers using 7.5 million gallons. This year we're up 70 residential customers because of growth, but they only use slightly over 7 million. So again, they had about a 9.6% drop per person. So then at the very bottom, you'll see our residential culinary gallons. We've grown... 300 odd customers, but our usage has actually dropped, so our usage per connection is down 8.9%. So I think we're seeing possibly some behavior changes where people are already being conscientious about using less water.
Like fail.
It's easy when you don't open ski lines.
What was the
Or everybody
has
a
campus
COVID, and then they
and right now, our winter usage is usually more based on occupancy than anything. But this will be very interesting to watch as we do it for the months as we start to see usage. Mm-hmm. And so we can quickly identify, yes, it, you know, who's being good, who's being bad, let's say, who's adhering, at least as a group. But kind of... Ian, when I gave you the number earlier of about 30% of our customers are large residential, that comes from this.
Mm-hmm.
And but so when I do that, 80% of our customers will not have a rate increase under the drought. 20% of our customers equates to about 800 customers. So you can see that it can't all be made up of large residential people. it's a mix of some large residential, some residential, you know, and things like that. So, so that's, but
yeah,
is this kind of what you're after? What was that?
Yeah, this really teases it out. One question about category though. Restrooms?
Maybe I'll take it out. There's just some like that Schneiderville Basin Rec has around some areas,
trailheads,
things like that that we serve.
Okay. So they are restrooms.
They are restrooms.
Got it.
And I left the fire hydrant.
Interesting trend on that one.
I think there might have been a leak in one of them last year or something like that, if I was guessing.
So.
Yeah.
Right on.
Brian's confirming with a head nod. So.
The one in Silver Creek Village.
Oh, the one in Silver Creek Village had a leak last year early. So. So yeah, we'll make this part of my monthly report so that we can kind of track this and see what the average use per customer per class, yeah, by categories. So. But yeah, and we'll group it, like I said, we're going to group it by commercial and residential and do some subtotals so it's easy to see that too. And I think that's about it for me tonight.
Great work, Steve.
Thank you.
Did we lose somebody?
Did you guys hear us?
Was that green?
That was green.
Yeah. Can I just drop the call?
You have not entered any numbers. Please re-enter your meeting ID followed by pound.
Is it not what's there, or can I help you, Chris?
You have not entered any numbers. Please re-enter your meeting ID followed by. Enter your participant ID followed by pound. Please enter the meeting password followed by pound. Entered 243025. This meeting password is invalid. Please re-enter the meeting password followed by pound. You have joined the meeting as an attendee and will be muted throughout the meeting. The host would like to turn the live microphone. You can press star 6 to unmute.
You guys hear us now?
Yes, sorry.
Yeah, can you hear us?
That's really weird.
Is it just you and me, Mike? And
no,
Joel probably does. And there's that like awesome echo.
The host would like to join me. My microphone is like you can press star 6.
Well, it's I've tried to force it to go to that, and it's taking a boat. It's the problem. This is unbelievable. Can you guys hear us? No. Can you hear us now? How about now?
Mike, can you still hear me?
No.
Yeah.
Are you, can you hear us?
Bummer, we don't have any agenda items. We can't really talk.
The host would like you to unmute your microphone. You can press star 6 to unmute.
And we've got an executive.
You are unmuted.
To the end, unfortunately.
How about now?
Yep.
Yep, we can hear you.
Good grief.
You got us?
Yeah, I think we hit the 3 hour time limit and it kicked us off.
All right, without further ado, let's jump into Lisa's comments.
Oh, I think I might have already, I just had the water symposium, which you've already talked about.
Wait, can you guys hear us?
Yes.
Yes, yes. Can you hear us?
Oh, sorry, sorry. Okay, yeah. I misunderstood that. Got it.
Yes, that's all I have. Enough for me.
Okay, then, any questions on the department update? Nobody put any
questions. I have that question for Sam on the vault, but it answered in the other one. And then I had a question for Brian about that water main break on Lower Evergreen. I walked past that the other day. It looks like the whole road is going down the hill. Is that something we need to alert the county on?
Yeah.
That's not our responsibility, right? Like, just because the water main break happened there and the whole road looks like it's cracking and falling down the side of the hill, that's not on us. That's just like long-term progression of that street, right?
Yeah, unfortunately. The water road up there, like that.
Does the county have a plan to mitigate that, or are we going to continue to have breaks there because the whole slope's just sliding down the hill?
I haven't heard of any plan, but there is no.
Because we used to do them all together.
Yeah.
The sewer district, Mountain Regional, and the county, but they've since pulled out of spending any more money in Summit Park.
County's got a Summit Park.
Yeah.
It's going to fall apart now.
Yeah.
But getting
it's
getting
worse. It's going
to get worse.
I know that street's like a pariah because it's so narrow and it's not the code. It's probably a total nightmare to do any construction in there, but it seems like that should be a priority over other spots.
What were we working on for next year?
Woodland.
Is Evergreen on a...
Woodland's not sliding down a hill, but yeah, Evergreen's really close.
Yeah.
That could be next.
Our priority is just we have a lot of issues, so... We didn't have actually too many issues on Lower Evergreen.
Okay. That's it for me. I'm just going to highlight that. So I'm good.
Hey, Mike or Joel, do you have any comments on the department update? Okay. Hearing none, do we have a motion to go into executive session?
And what are we going in for again?
We're going in for property acquisition and litigation.
Okay. Motion to go into executive session for property litigation. And what was the other one? Sorry.
Oh, property acquisition and litigation.
And litigation, yeah.
Possible litigation.
That was Ethan and Joel?
Correct.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay. So.
Motion to adjourn.
Okay. That's Ian. Do we have a second?
Second.
Mike.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
All right.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that's unanimous.
This is great, Andy. Usually we're not out till 10.
Okay, we're being adjourned at 9:13 p.m.